everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Tuesdays through Thursdays, almost at 1 o'clock on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And last week we were focusing on this issue about people and their gender and how genders affect things. Today we're going to continue our discussion about the war of the sexes, gender stuff. This is my intent, to unravel the mysteries of why people who are supposedly loving behave like adversaries, antagonistic. The focus this week is going to be on men. Many aspects of men, their conscious and unconscious behaviors, their thinking, their attributes. We're going to be looking at this week men and their relationships to their mothers, men and their relationship to other men, men and their relationships to aggression. I think it's a valuable conversation. I think you'll enjoy this one way or another, even if you're somebody who doesn't relate to men at all, because I think you must have had a man in your life, a father or something like that. You must have taken a position at some point, and I think understanding would be great help. I do not presume to know. I think what I'm about to present to you is valuable information on men. What makes men tick? Here's a letter I received from someone who happens to be a great writer, but happened to send me a note about the theme. She said, "I don't hate men for being how they are. I don't hold them responsible. I feel more fear towards them because of their sheer ignorance. It's what they don't know that's so frightening, not what they know." That's kind of interesting. "I don't find men malicious. I think their intent is to destroy the earth, but that's not what they are doing, and they don't even get it. That's what they are doing. I don't think their intent is to destroy the earth, but that's what they're doing, and they don't even get it." Okay, they intend to destroy the earth, and they don't intend it, but that's what they're doing. That's why it's so scary. It's like watching all these insane entities running around all over the place, making huge, detrimental, irrevocable mistakes and not being able to do anything about it. I think the whole rest of the world, all the plants and animals and marine life and stars and children and women, must on some level have a sheer terror of men because men are threatening their very existence. It's horrible, and it creates loathing and fear that is probably natural when survival is threatened. I don't know if people go around feeling this way or articulating this to themselves, but I think it's under there somewhere. I think somewhere underneath, everybody understands that men is the enemy. Interesting. Interesting perception when you think about it. Is this what men have become? Now, let's think about that for a moment, because, you know, if I think about the male, the destructive male, I think, well, you know, the difference between, they used to say the difference between getting a male dog and a female dog is the male is likely to be more aggressive. Okay. Isn't that part of what the identity is? Well, we're going to be looking at that all week. Women watch men destroy the planet. But everybody is a part of it on some level, aren't we? Maybe not. Are men the enemy, or is testosterone the enemy? You know what I mean? If it weren't for testosterone, if it weren't for this aggressive hormone that is part of the male, I mean, why blame men? Why blame mankind? You know, some people look at mankind and they say it's mankind destroying the planet. Then some people look at Americans and they say it is American mankind that is destroying the planet. And then they say, no, it's only the men, not the kind, not the others that is destroying. It's only the men. The men are doing all the things, you know, in business and so on and so forth. But now let's go even a step further. Maybe it's not men. Maybe it's their hormones that are destroying the planet. So maybe it's the male hormone, testosterone, that is the enemy. Well, let's think about that for a minute. I mean, we just found out, you know, we used to think that if a woman is going through menopause, interesting word, men and pause, you know, she's going through it. And one of the ways of easing the symptoms is to give her a combination of progesterone and testosterone. We're going to give her some male hormone as she goes through it so she can ease her way through it. Now we found out that male hormone causes cancer or may cause cancer. Interesting, huh? Is the male hormone the enemy? Is the idea here we get rid of the male hormone? You know, or do something to it? You know, if we get Prozac depression, maybe we could do something to the hormones. Well, Armand DeMille here. We're going to look at it, you know? Testosterone, you know? Anyway, the issue is men. And we're going to look at this in, not only in theory, but we're going to look at it with your attitudes, with your feelings. We're going to see what you feel. Men the lovers, men the seemingly romantic, sexual, charming, or strong, men the sensitive or the insensitive, men the powerful, men the weak, men the providers, and men the non-providers, men. I'm going to report the results of some recent, I hate to say recent investigations, but recent published research. You know, I hate when we say we go around, we doing a recent investigation. You know, it sounds like such a big deal. We read a few books. We checked with some information. Recent investigations into what really goes on with men regarding sex. There's something I keep noticing as I hear men and women talk about sex and sensuality, you know, and love. There's a strong confusion going on here, and maybe we could clear it up this week, or at least make a dent. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're looking at issues of sexuality, we're looking at issues of relationships, but we're specifically looking at men. And is it that women hate men and men hate women? Is there basically a battle under here that is just purely antagonistic when you get past the needs, the romance, when you get past the initial phase of two people being married, the honeymoon, the getting together? Do we have what's left, a battle? Well, a lot of people are finding out that battle does ensue. What they're saying is, let's get divorced. Two-year marriages. Marriages are 2 years nowadays, and 50% of the people bail out. Maybe they're doing the wise thing. Maybe they're doing the stupid thing. Maybe all that's left after that is having to deal with problems. You know what I mean? Maybe, maybe. Now, this is not just, by the way, heterosexual relationships. This is true. Now, what I'm hoping to speak about men, is valuable for all sexualities. If you listen to men and you see the way that men talk to women, one of the things you see very often is men scaring women, talking about some of the horrible things that could happen. You know, the Taliban are now going to squeeze into the movie theaters and they're going to bring your impressions of your own country down. It sounds a little like the McCarthy hearings. And they're going to come and they're going to get you. And why do men like to do scary things? Because if they scare you, the opposite sex or the weaker sex, then you'll grab onto them for safety, you see? If I scare you enough, you're going to hold on to me. It's just what the government is doing. It is exactly what our government is doing nowadays regarding the terrorists. If we scare you enough, you're going to cling to us. If an election comes along, we're going to lose our majority of Republicans in the Senate? No. We're going to hit you with war at the last minute. We're going to give you a new threat. We're going to tell you about the Corsicans, you know, who are coming to get you. And then we'll scare you, and you'll hold on to us for dear life. That's a male thing. Scare the women, and they'll cling to you. They'll be afraid to leave you. Well, you know, it worked for many years, right? It worked right up until, I remember, I think it was Reagan was about to get elected or re-elected, boom, Granada. You know, we just make up a war, get somewhere, make something happen. The Albanians are coming after us, right? I think it's the Corsicans, by the way, who are going to eventually do it. So today's focus is on men. This is a strong confusion. Here's an interesting hypothesis. Sex has little to do with sex. How's that as a hypothesis? Sex is mostly about fear for men. Now, isn't that an interesting hypothesis? You see, I believe that men in general fear women. I really do. I believe that fear leads men to many funny behaviors, including rejecting intimacy with women completely so that they can maybe level the playing field. Maybe they don't want intimacy because they're afraid. Afraid that if I become intimate with you and I need you, and I really acknowledge my relationship and my love with you, then you have power to hurt me. Power, things you could do to me. So instead, if I keep you on a semi-intimate level, and then I keep another one on the side, if you bail on me, I'll go grab the other one. You know, what if you go through a hormonal week? What am I going to do? I'm going to have to find the other one. See, I'm going to have to look elsewhere. Or if you're just getting mad at me for something I did that maybe you even justified your aggression, your anger towards me, I'll go find someone else. So they keep, you know, they never completely commit. Not only men, I mean, women do this as well. You keep a spare somewhere, you know, in case you lose your key. But it's like, I think that men really fear this kind of commitment that they have. I think men fear love. God, to be, we're trained, we guys are trained to be independent and strong, to not need to provide for ourselves. Imagine if I felt so connected to you that I wanted to never be without you. It would be such a vulnerable position and certainly not manlike. And that's how I think men are brought up. Hey, if you're a man, listen, I implore you to consider what I'm about to propose. Please don't reject this concept too quickly. And for you, the women who might be prepared to gloat over my taking the men down a peg, I implore you, listen with a compassionate rather than a vengeful heart. Listen to learn. The more we learn, the more peace we make. And that's the idea of today's show. It's of the positive mind. The reason we want this program here is to make peace in the world. That's the Pacifica commitment. We are here to keep things at peace. This program is about you understanding other people. And if the more you understand, the less war you'll make, I promise. So maybe if the sexes begin to understand each other, like any two warring countries or warring races need to understand each other, maybe if we take the time to understand, we can start making peace. Let's consider most men's experience of women. Right? And in this discussion, I do not exclude the gay and lesbian community, because many of this very same dynamics apply. Many homosexual partners refer to each other as husband and wives, even though the partner may not be born female or the wife or born male, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. So as usual with me, some of you may have to reinterpret the gender identifications as I use this as my reference point. The real point that I want to make is that sex is very confusing. It is very confusing to men. It is very confusing to women. What is sex to you? Now, there's a funny question. What is sex to you? Did you ever ask yourself, really ask yourself what sex means to you? Let's try a few belief systems, the classic male one. You know, the male idea. We ask a man, what is sex to you? Ask a teenage man. Sex is fun. I like to come. Slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. That's one approach. For many men, especially adolescents. Sex is a compulsion, a tension that yearns to be relieved. To the youth is a biological imperative. Right? The biological imperative, the thing you're born with, spill that seed as often as you can, spread it out, keep the species going. That's what every male of every species is born with. Nature designs it that way. Take the male in any species and you'll generally see that he needs to have sex as frequently as possible, dominates his existence, its courting mechanism, you know, keep it going, gotta get a mate, gotta have sex. As Darwin discovered, propagation is the primary goal of all living things, but the way nature went about it is to simplify the process. Males have one job, get the seed around. If you spill enough seed, you'll eventually grow something. So that's the basic design of nature. Mostly it's indiscriminate. It doesn't require the male to select the fittest female. It doesn't require that. You know, females want to select and give access to the fittest male. But nature seems to figure that if the male spills the seed, sperm, or pollen anywhere, in anything, it doesn't matter as long as he just keeps getting it out there. And if the recipient is unfit, it won't bear the offspring to fruition, but it doesn't matter. We have hundreds of thousands of these seeds. We could just spill that seed, get a little lost, and you end in jail. You know, just let it out. So nature's design is simple for males, especially when they're young. That's why young men can find themselves masturbating 20 times a day. Feel a little relief, and then they go back for more. I mean, what do they think the idea of it is? You know, boom, 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 what am I doing this for? It's like being a little lost. That's why in a large part, sex with prostitutes, cruising, baths, truck stops exist. It has little to do with intention or psychology. It has to do with hormonal urges, biological imperatives, mandates by the grand designer, nature herself. You feel the urge, go do it. You got to do it. I mean, that's the basis you walk in with. So sex is, if anything, as natural as you could get. It's natural. But human sex, social sex, gets very complicated. For any one of 1,000 reasons, society decided that it doesn't work to have a society that is dominated by testosteronic impulses. Because included in these urges are the need to destroy the competition. Animals will fight to the death for sex rights. Right? You got a bull, and another bull comes along, and he's got all his cows. I'll kill you. Stay away from my cows. Those are my darlings. Right? You get a stag and another stag, and they got their deer around there, and, hey, stay away from my deer. And they'll fight to the death. I mean, they'll kill each other. Fish will kill each other. Everybody will kill each other over their property, over this thing, and this is the way they are. So if we were going to follow the testosteronic rules, there would be men killing each other all over the place, which there is, but, you know, I mean, as we call that war. Included in those urges are the urge to destroy competition. Also, indiscriminate sex leads to incest and the burdening of society with the offspring of incest-born children who tend to be weaker and a drain on society. So as mankind developed, he developed rules and controls over male sexuality. That's why we have it. And from that specific dilemma, the need to control killing of competitors, the need to control incestual pregnancies, came a demand that males no longer follow their biological urges. Therefore, we developed some way of controlling your sexual urges besides a rubber band. What are we going to do? We developed religion, morals, rules of monogamy, even marriage, restrictions, so that you could stop. Because we had to control male sexuality. Now, what do you think? We even attributed these rules to God because we knew we needed a strong fear to control these primitive biological urges. So sex in many ways became a sin, and then sex became a crime. You know, if you have the wrong sex with the wrong person, you could get arrested if you do it in the wrong way. Think about it. The most popular exposés are about men refuting society's demand that they follow the rules of sex. You know, keep their thing in their pants. Pardon the rude references. But nature didn't adapt the rest of us as much. They didn't adapt the equipment. They didn't adapt our hormones. They didn't adapt our minds. So you would think that if men were forced to control their sexuality, nature would eventually adapt it so that men would not feel so much sexuality. Well, maybe that's what's taking place. Maybe that's why there's such a high level of impotence in male society today. Maybe men are trying as hard as they can to evolve into a less testosteronic group, you know? I mean, usually it takes millions of years to do that or thousands of years to do it, but, you know, this is pretty smart men nowadays. So men go along always in internal conflict. The biology says one thing, and your priest says another. Actually, it's a wrong reference. The biology says one thing, and the society says another. So with this conflict of having to constantly deal with their sexual urges, men do different things with their minds and their bodies to try to adapt. In a physical sense, we've learned that you could change your own testosteronic impulses by actually adjusting your chemistry. If you do something about your chemistry, then you're not driven by your hormones. drugs are obvious solutions. Tranquilizers, alcohol, marijuana, the most popular drugs, do the biggest job on reducing urges. You may refute this by saying that you feel more sexual with grass and alcohol, but it's not true on a biological level. It actually works against your sexual impulses. Marijuana and alcohol, and cigarettes for that matter, reduce testosterone levels. What many drugs do is remove the societal inhibitions that are controlling you, so they allow you to express a suppressed sexuality, but it truly reduces the sexual levels as well. So now you got a drunk guy trying to get laid, but he can't get it up because he's feeling the reduction of the impulses. He's really working at it, but now the parts don't function. Other things we've learned to control get tied to aggression. So in effect, if we control aggressive impulses, if we reject things that tend to go along with aggression, we can control our sexuality better. Isn't this interesting, friends? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I am sure somebody's going to sample today's program. Sampling programs, I promised to tell you about this. We're going to take a short break because I want you to hear something. I have been sampled. Turns out there are now 4 albums that I have heard of that have sampled my voice, and they have taken the voice of The Positive Mind and included it on very strange, unusual music, some of it on the other side of the planet. Here's an example of one. This is a group called the Grave Diggers. I'm going to have to be real careful on this one because as I go through it, they have certain profanities that I can't allow on the air, so you're going to have to bear with my cutting. But listen to this. Listen to what The Positive Mind has become. It's gotten included in a couple of discs. I'm having such a good time with this. Okay, here's the first one.
Yeah. Back again in the midst of the dirt, in the lurky mud, in the dark clouds, in the pitch black skies, in the stages of triple darkness, I spark this microphone to inject y'all to a lethal dose of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding from the original man's planning.
Armand?
Yo, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'm here.
You have about 4 calls.
For real.
There are a lot of questions I'm going to ask you about this week. But the idea of living other than yourself, I'm not going to put it down. Now, that's a piece of it. I had to stop it there. I had to stop it there because something happens at that point. Now, let me give you where this picks up. Here we go. I'm doing it. Oops.
Careful, careful.
Yeah, careful, careful is right. I actually got him. I caught him in the middle of the sentence. But here you go. You got to hear the rest of this because it goes to 123 where I'm going. And here, now listen.
Of course you do. Of course you wear a mask. Of course, as a child, you learned that your natural self was not acceptable. I understand. I understand that your parents didn't want you to be who you were, and your siblings didn't want you to be who you were. I understand that.
So, that's one group called the Gravediggers, and I had to be careful on that one. Obviously, not careful enough. Please forgive me. Here's another one. Just beautiful. So, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, now reaching around. This one goes to England, where a group, this is so much fun, where a group called Brand Van has decided to sample us and put us on with a different thing, which is kind of fun. Sample means they take the voice and they play it. So here comes another piece. This one we don't have to watch out for. Well, that we see now, best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. I'm just messing up a tiny bit. Bear with me, honey. Friends, this is just right here. Here it is. Here it is. This is worth it, I promise. Just to think that this has gotten around like this. Now give me good news about your daydreams. What kind of daydreams do you have? Rhythmic and loud music that carries you into a frenzy of dance where you lose yourself in it. Lose yourself in it. There's more to it, friends. It's just cute. I mean, you're a part of this. You know, this is watching this thing happen is kind of amazing. Hey, Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking calls in a little while. I want to continue with this to kind of talk to you. We're talking about male sexuality. And we'll be taking calls a little later. You know, other things that we've learned to control that get tied to aggression. So, in effect, if we control aggression, mind you. So we exercise to get rid of excess aggressive impulses. We meditate. We go to therapy. We stop eating red meat. We have discussions. We reason. We marry. We have families. We make commitments. We really try. And for all that trying, I mean, you got to think about it. And the men are trying desperately not to be a slave to their own impulses, their sexual impulses. So they try. They try not to look. You know? You wonder why it leaks out at a job. I mean, these poor organisms who are being tossed out there at a job, and they're standing there, you know, and they're... every part of them is responding to everybody they see, and they're trying to inhibit it, and they're working at it. But if you think about it, if you look at it from a distance, you'd feel compassion. Poor guys carrying around this biological imperative and inhibiting it. Good. So now, look at what we give our pets. If you have a male cat or a dog, and you know that you're not going to allow it to have sex, you alter the animal. So that it and you are not tormented by their natural urges. But do we alter men? Well, the truth is we do. But with very few exceptions. We don't do it physically, we do it mentally. And herein lies the young man's biggest problem. Now, I say the young man because that's what nature planned, the biggest urges, the youngest and the strongest. Nature has a way of reducing those urges as you get older. It reduces testosterone impulse. It enlarges the prostate. It plans an early death for men, you know, earlier than with women. But men don't give up their youth so easily, especially if they're damaged in childhood by all the control mechanisms that were placed on their sexuality. Men spill their seed with desperation as they get older, you know. So physical fitness, not for the sake of health, but for the sake of staying attractive, becomes an obsession. Just think about the fitness clubs. Men working out while women are wearing skimpy clothing. What a magic formula. That's why health clubs are only successful. If they are attractive. Another way that men adapt to their conflict about their urges versus their controls is through obsessions, especially business obsessions, overworks, or depression. Depression controls sexual urges, and fatigue controls sex. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It is, my friends, just right now, 1:30. You could set your clock up. And before we go any further, I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating random sexual indiscrimination. Because, you know, there's this fatigue thing. What do you think chronic fatigue syndrome is about in men? Think about it as chronic sexual repression syndrome. A man's always at war with himself, with his biological self. So before we go any further, I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating random sexual indiscrimination. I'm not saying that men should be any different than they are. We do need sexual controls. We cannot survive as a society if we're being led around by our gonads, men. So what I want you to do is understand is the depth of the conflict, the intensity of the self-denial that men must deal with, and how it doesn't really work without consciousness being brought to it. I want to help you bring the consciousness to it. I want your compassion for what men deal with internally. And at a later time, I'll present with far less authority what women have to deal with internally, sexually, and I'll demand the same compassion. But let's look at men this week. Women have to deal with men's sexuality and the internal conflict men have about their sexuality all the time. So let's take it a step further. What happens to men around their sexuality is that sex is not a natural expression of biological urges as it was designed to be. But sex becomes something else completely. It becomes the expression of all the gonadal frustration. Sex becomes a symbolic act. Now we get into the deeper psychological stuff. Sex is no longer sex. Sex is you're pushing it down, you're pushing it down, you're pushing it down, you finally get a chance to let it come out. Sex becomes such a frustration which cannot be talked about because we've convinced every boy child that sexual urges are wrong, ungodly, masturbation is evil, even if it's even wrong if you touch yourself. Dads silently tolerate their son's sexual behaviors as well as they have to deal with their own. But men are basically angry about the way it is handled. You should pardon the expression. So men lose just by being born men. And it gets them angry. And they spend the rest of their lives compensating for the loss. And why do they get angry at the most? Well, there are two groups. They get angry at the most. There are two groups. They get mad at the controllers, the societies, the authority, the religion, gods, parents, and teachers. You show me an antisocial guy, and I'll show you a sexy guy. I'll show you somebody with more sexual impulses and urges that are being sublimated and misdirected. But more than that, they get mad at the ones who engender their lust. What's important here is that men get internally furious at the ones they want the most. And for the sake of easy reference, I'm going to stick to the heterosexual model, although what I'm saying applies to gay people too. You see, somebody, you want them sexually, then you have to destroy their resistance. You see somebody and you got to knock them down. You see somebody and you got to kind of wheedle them. You got to buy them. You got to see what you got to do to get that thing to happen. Because you're really basically frustrated. Now, if you meet the right, very willing partner, you have to do very little. Do it, it's great, it's over. Maybe someday in the future, but once the urge is gone, the future doesn't matter. But very few people want to just be a receptacle. Very few people just want to be, okay, do it to me. And you disappear 5 minutes later. So the game ensues, a game that frequently gets mistaken for love or romance. Now, I'm not saying that all men look for is sex. But what I'm saying is that when women encounter men, the men, are frequently filled with a long history of anger and frustration that happens from the day of their first sexual awareness. This is especially true of the most sensitive of men, the New Age man. He just learned a new trick of seduction, that you get what you want by listening. So now he's listening. This is especially true. And although it seems like progress, in another way, many of you women will testify that although a man is very sensitive, something always happens where the secret escape clause goes into effect with those very sensitive guys. The very sensitive guys are there 100%, but I have seen over and over again from women, or heard many times, that they talk about these men having this kind of passive aggression. And what happens is they disappear. I just need some space. I need to, and they have an excuse to leave. So it doesn't seem to be any better. Seemingly sensitive men can be real lady killers. Hey, we're going to continue with this in a couple of minutes. I want to take a short break. I want to play you a little music, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, and then at some point we will be taking your calls. If you're queuing up now, it's a little early, because I have just a little further step I want to take you on, and when we get back, soon we'll take your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Here's a little something for you. Here's a little something. So we could kind of tone it down a little. Thank you. Turrentine on his Ballads album. You could get, we'll play a little more of that later. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, Monday through Thursday, Tuesday through Thursday, WBAI 99.5 FM. With the help of special thanks to Andrea today, who's doing a wonderful job of the engineering. Just terrific at this, keeping this going.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So what does sex become if it's not pure pleasure? Huh? Huh? I like that. Huh? Is it the ultimate intimacy? Hardly. Sex doesn't make you any more intimate than kissing. Actually, kissing is far more intimate than sex, isn't it? You know, then I mean, sleeping with someone doesn't make you more intimate. Well, no, that's not true. Sleeping with someone does make you more intimate. If you touch while you're sleeping, you know, if you hold each other while you're sleeping, breathing each other's air, you know, skin to skin, all that transmission that takes place there. But it's not the sex that makes you more intimate. If you touch while you're sleeping, you know, but sex in itself does not make you more intimate. It just makes you less angry, less frustrated. And it makes two people who have been satisfied by one thing or another, which is the need to be in contact with another person or just an orgasm itself, it makes them relax with each other. And it makes them like each other a little more. And it puts the war away for a little bit. It gives a beautiful kind of ending to the war for the moment. For the moment. So men resent the control that women have over them. They resent it. And they want to turn the tides. They want to regain control. So what do? They are now going to, they are now frustrated animals. They're going to seduce. And again, I say this is not a conscious thing with many men. To them, they may feel like they are in love. How many of you know a man who is constantly falling in love with a new woman? Is that love? Or is it sex? Or is it a compulsion to regain the balance that a man loses and has lost by not having been able to feed his primitive sexual urges? You know, you see a lot of guys who are hypersexual who have been repressed early on, who have been bought the repression. So men are angry at the women. Angry at their power to say yes or no. Angry at the deals they have to make to have her. You know, angry at the flowers and the candy and all the other things and being nice and listening to them talk. Because men usually don't even want to listen. You know, leave me alone. They don't want to listen because if they listen, they feel somebody's going to make a demand on them. If they listen, then they're going to have another task. If they listen to a conversation, the conversation is going to be about angst. It's going to be about a problem. And men get angry at the society for imposing the restriction. And on some level, with most men, men want to annihilate women, with the exception of the men who are listening, who I am sure, I don't mean you. So don't call up and defend yourself. So let me make my point a little stronger. You should pardon the expression. Sex is about annihilation. Sex is a way of making a partner lose control. Sex is about surrender. The experience of surrender yourself, the experience of the other person's surrender. It's an experience of losing control and not losing control. It's like all this stuff that you have to go through. It acts out in the bed. So what do? We interpret it as love. And we put in the word love. I am not saying that love is sex. And I'm not saying that love doesn't exist, because I truly believe it does. I believe that there is a love relationship. But I want people to understand that I do believe that men are caught in this system. That's why this week we're going to be talking about male sexuality more. We're going to talk about womanizing and the whole concept of it. And how womanizing, I think, is really a need for a man to find his father. Well, in fact, I may not even wait to talk about that. Listen to this. Listen to this. The greatest womanizers. Now, a womanizer is a man who takes women, uses them, chews them up, spits them out. Doesn't seem to care. He's got a lot of wounded walking around, really angry at him, you know. Usually it's somebody who has a lot of access to women, and, you know, the women come, he He uses them for whatever he uses them for, money, sex, you know, whatever. And then he kind of dumps them as soon as they give him a hard time. He's not there for conversations. He's not there for anything else. He's there just to have a good time, womanizers. But what are womanizers looking for? What is this thing going on? How is he going from one woman to another woman to another woman to another woman, searching out something and not getting it? Because let's say he has somebody who says, here's all the sex you want and all the love you want. I'm all over you. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Somewhere, after four times, he says, all right, I've had enough. I'm going to go. I have a business meeting. And he gets up and he leaves, and then he has sex again with somebody else, and he gets up and he goes and has sex with somebody else. What is that about? What's he looking for? Is he looking for his mother? That's what theorists say. Theorists say, he's searching for his mother, and he's trying to find a union similar to the one he had with his mother when he was a kid. Well, most of these guys did not have close unions with their mothers, number one. Number two, they especially did not have close unions with their fathers. So here's my theory. Maybe what men are looking for is their fathers. Now, this is interesting because, you know, a lot of people talk about homophobia and how men are afraid of being sexual with men. Men need their dads. Men need males in their lives. Just like women need women friends and women need women in their lives. You need it. You got to feel like there's brothers and sisters around. You got to feel like you're part of a pack. In fact, we're going to do a program on men who only relate to women. We're going to do that later this week, I think. But what happens is I think men turn around and they look at their, and they're looking for their dad somewhere. They're looking to feel this connection with a man. And they don't know how to do it because they're afraid of getting close to men because they're afraid that when you get really close to a man, there's a homosexual threat. And this comes up in their mind. So this homophobia comes up. I can't get close to you. You know, I'll slap you on the back, but if you hug me, I'm afraid you're going to kiss me. So they kind of back off all the time. You know, they're always afraid of this. So what they're doing is they're looking to get close to a man because they want to feel a man. They want to feel strong, close to a man. They want to feel their fathers, in effect. And what do? They can't do it with men, so they take women instead. Now, women is acceptable. A man's allowed to get close physically to a woman. But what happens is he is, in this way, becoming the father he wants to hold. He's becoming the male that he really wants to get close to. He's playing the role of his father by being close to women. And the attempt of men who are womanizers to constantly search for their father by becoming their father for a moment. But of course, it's transient. It doesn't work. You feel it. You feel it for the moment. And then that person that's at the other end of you, you know, they don't really have any meaning. So you move on to the next one. And since you never really felt the connection to your father, you're desperately searching for daddy. That's what I think womanizing is about. I think manizing is the same thing, but we'll talk about that in another time. When women are desperately searching through men, very often I think they're searching for the woman. They're really searching for their mothers. But that gets really complicated. This is Armand DeMille. Hey, it's your time. I've talked enough. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. We're going to take calls. Now I'm going to take a call right this minute, Andrea, if they've got somebody on the line.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Hi there. Well, congratulations.
Hey, I feel in depression over a woman, and I wonder if depression is curable.
Well, yeah, depression is curable. What is the depression over women? Tell me about it.
Oh, well, I had a relationship with a girl a few months. She was just a friend, and I became obsessive, and she cut me off from her life.
Ouch. Ouch, that hurt. Yeah. And you've been depressed deeply depressed since?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And let me ask you about the depression. How depressed are you? I mean, do you go to work?
Yeah, I can go to work and stuff like that. But before, I was so weak, I couldn't get out of my bed.
Yeah.
I couldn't eat good. I couldn't function right.
You couldn't eat, you couldn't, and these are the real signs. Can't eat, disturbance of eating, disturbance of sleep.
Sleeping,
you know,
suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, and some suicidal thoughts, just really rough. How did it end so quickly?
No, it was just a friendship because what happened, we were friends, but then what happened, she wanted to be friends, but she told me she was going to date with somebody else, and I popped up in her house, a few hours later, and I think I was wrong for popping up in her house because she said, you know, you're not supposed to do that.
So did you find it with the other date?
Huh?
Did you
find it? No, the other date, she went out with the other date already, but the point is, I just got sick over it. I don't know why I got sick over her for.
And you ran up to her house, and she said, now I never want to see you again, right?
No, she didn't say it like that, but she just never called me again.
Well, I never called you, and you're like waiting, and you, so it must upset you. Let me ask you this. Does it get you angry?
I was angry because I kept replaying in my mind why she did this to me, why she cut me off from a life. And it kind of bothered me, and I felt depression. Like I said, I had to go in the hospital. Every day I ran to the hospital because I started feeling kind of bad, and then it told me I suffered from major depression.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm trying to blame her for it, for getting me sick.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. Well, there's quite a bit of treatment for it. And going to the hospital was a really good idea because you saw that your own feelings about it. But it's a good time to go to therapy. Where do you live?
I live in Queens, top Ozone Park, Queens.
Ozone Park, Queens. You know, there's a place in Ozone Park, Queens. It has a waiting list, but it's a very interesting place for very low cost. It's called...
I get therapy already.
You do get therapy already? Who are you getting with?
Yes, I get therapy.
Through the hospital?
Yeah, at the clinic, psychotherapy.
Yeah, good.
I get that every Thursday.
All right, so that should work for you, you know, and if it doesn't work, then you got to do more. What does your therapist say about the depression?
She said that she claimed it's treatable and it could be cured.
Yeah, and I think it can. I think
it can be?
Yeah, I think it can be, you know. And I think, see how it goes, because if you don't get this response from her, if you're not getting better, call my office at some point. You know, you can get the phone number through the station, and we'll find you a place out there where you are, in Ozone Park, you know?
But depression, is it curable?
Yes, it is, absolutely. Your kind of depression, which is called a reactive depression, which means in reaction to something, that's curable.
Yes.
You just got to learn certain things about what happens underneath it. And if you get a skill
therapist. I've been taking medication and I feel better, but it seems like I'm at 100% right now.
Yeah, and the medication will make you not feel 100% also. Medication brings you to feeling better, but it makes you not feel like normal. You know, but it's good that you picked up. It's good that you're not having the suicidal ideation. The goal is to get off the medication eventually, you know, not to be on it. But the more you learn about yourself as a man, the more you learn about your own frustrations and your own anger, the better you're going to be now and for your future relationships. What's your first name?
I should get better, Dean.
Yeah, what's your first name?
Dean.
Dean, I want to thank you very much for calling, and congratulations on calling us for the first time.
Okay.
All right? Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, you know that what you hear from Dean is what you hear from so many people. It's the way they feel on the inside. That kind of depression when a relationship just knocks you out. Now, the question for that kind of reaction to a relationship is, here again we see it. Dean feels completely shot. He's completely wiped out. He's been amputated, you know, and he sounds that way. He sounds like he's lost something completely. What's really going on is he's angry. But what does he do with this anger? You certainly don't bring this anger to the girlfriend, but this anger gets you feel this kind of anger, and then you replay the story in your mind over and over again, what I shoulda, I shoulda, I shoulda, and then you blame yourself. At the point that you're blaming yourself, depression's inevitable. But it sometimes takes a while to weed through it, to get to the point where you see that. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Okay.
Hi there.
Hold on. No, they should be gone. Hold on.
Okay, we're working.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can. Can you turn down your radio?
Okay, I'm moving away from it.
No, you got to turn it off.
It's now in another room.
No, you still have to turn it off because there's a feedback that happens. I can't talk to you if the radio is on.
I see.
I'll wait for you. Can you go inside?
Yeah, I will back up into it just a moment.
Thank
you. Can I continue to talk to you as I back up?
No, go back up to it. I'll sing. What's your name?
Sophia.
Hello, Sophia. See, I'm still getting that feedback. Get that radio off. And to the other callers who are calling in, your radio must be off when you talk on the phone with me. Okay.
Okay, it's off.
Okay, now that's okay. Great. Hi, Sophia.
Now, regarding your theory about men are looking for their fathers, I have a theory that maybe men are looking for their fathers so that they can get at their mothers because they've been getting double messages from their mother. Say, for instance, a son has grows up with a sister and she's first and they're a year apart in age and the mother is always hugging the daughter and kissing her and everything and then she's doing the same thing then to the son but all of a sudden the son starts getting aroused. So the mother sees that and so she pushes him away so the boy is getting double messages. Hey, she says she loves me 1 minute and she's pushing me away. What's going on? So what's your take on that?
You know, that's kind of interesting.
Wants to get back at his mother.
That's kind of interesting, Sophia. How has that manifested in your life? Have you run into that in a relationship with some guy you were related to?
No.
Oh, it's just a theory?
It's my theory. It's a pickup on what you were talking about.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, have you had this kind of experience with men? Have you observed men to be like this?
Well, I know there was one guy I was going out with, and he always called me mommy. And I said, hey, I'm not your mother, you know?
Yeah, so you don't like
me. Either call me by my name, or just don't even call, just forget about it, you know?
I understand.
No, Sophie, mommy, I'm not your mother.
So, Sophie, you're real sensitive to being a mommy target to men, you know? And
let me.
And that's what you said. So that's interesting how your theory evolves from that. But let me ask you a question. Do you believe that men are angry at women in general? Do you think there's a basic anger underneath there? Do you feel that?
Well, I say yes, and I have to agree with Wilhelm Reich because he said in his Murder of Christ, there's sex starvation. They're starved. They put them out to war. What do? They promise the soldiers, you can rape all the women you want in all the countries that you come to. So there's this, what makes for a criminal mind or criminal is lack of something.
Yeah.
And so you could say lack of sex, lack of some sort of power.
So how do you feel towards men in general? Do you have a man in your life right now?
Well, I have several in my life right now. It's basically friendship relationships. I'm not involved sexually with anybody.
And you're not involved, even just sexually, you don't feel particularly intimate with any of these men. These are friends, right? But you don't feel that level.
Yes, they're just friends right now. I don't feel like I want to go further with them, but I like having them as friends because I like their mind.
That's nice that you could set that up with men. It's nice that you could have that with men. What is it that stops you? I mean, and I'm not saying you should be more intimate, but what do you think is the point in your life right now, Sophie, where you're saying to yourself, you know, this is the level I want to be at. I don't want to go deeper than this. Have you been deeply?
It's not that.
Yeah? Tell me.
It's not that this is the level I want to be at. It's just that it happens to be this is the level where I'm at right now. There's no chemistry that's, you know, driving the body crazy right now for any one of these guys to want to jump in bed with them. You know, but I want to retain them as my friends. And besides that, they love my mind.
So I understand.
It works great, you know.
So they don't mind being retainers.
No, they don't.
Good.
I get calls from them. They're all over the United States. They're all over the United States. And we call each other back and forth all over. One of the things that when you were talking about earlier, have you ever read the original Talmud?
The original in Hebrew?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it's been translated into English in the 30s, and they were the 63 books. They were originally called the Teachings of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Jesus, you know, Sophie, we're running right up to the close of our program. And before you give me a lesson in the Talmud, which I really understand, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your calling in. But I've got to get off the air now, you know. But it's appreciating that there's stuff there, and I would appreciate it if you could either send me what you're saying, email it to me or something like that, because maybe I'll incorporate it in my future shows.
Bucks.
Well, no, but tell me. Tell me what you think. Don't send me 63 books.
Okay, no. What I think is that the originators of the pornography came from what was posted in the, I shouldn't say posted, was written in the 63 books of the Talmud.
Amazing.
It's the most pornographic, sodomistic, incestuous, pedophiliac filth I've ever read in my life.
And you read it in the original.
This is the original, not the one that's cleaned up.
I got you.
The book you could get on a shorter version would be the Talmud Unmasked.
Listen, I thank you. I thank you very much. Sophie, okay. Send me an email. I appreciate talking to you. It's armand@brainlink.com. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm sorry, my friends, even though we started a couple of minutes late, I've got to get off the air because, in fact, I should have been off already, but it's fun. I'm going to continue with this tomorrow. More on men. More on men? More about men. Hey, if you want a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-575-0580. That's 1-800-575-0580. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Self-explanatory.
I would think so.
In 7 seconds. 5 seconds.
And we're not going to play a card. We're going to go right to you.